Samaria. Okay.
Did they build the pyramids?
No. We are going to see that the Jews were involved in building Tel El Amarna. However, the thing is, they were slaves. Okay? So you'll see. You'll see. Now, one thing for sure is the Bible is immersed in history. No other religion is like Judaism and Christianity, which its entire premise is based on things that happened in history. I was having a little mini debate with a Hindu guy not too long ago, and I was saying, you know, one of the things about Jesus is we know where he lived, we know where he was born, we know where he died, we know how he died, we know the name of his mother, his father, three of his brothers, several of his friends, blah, blah, blah. And I said, Christian is not even a real person. Uh-oh. And he got really upset with me. And I said, well, here, do this. Tell me, come back and tell me where he lived and when he lived. And he didn't get back with me for a couple, few weeks. And he came back and said, he lived somewhere between 1500 BC and 0 BC, somewhere in that 1500 year period, and he lived in a town that nobody knows where it is. All right, there you go. All right? Krishna is not even a real person. But if you read the book of Joshua, chapter 1 through 3, the book of Joshua, just chapter 1 through 3 of Joshua, lists 29 cities. It lists 10 specific peoples, Hittites, Hivites, Jebusites, and it mentions 10 specific people by name and 17 peoples or nations or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the point is, either these cities actually existed or they didn't exist. And either these peoples existed or they didn't exist. What if Moses wasn't a real person? Would that have any effect on Christianity? Yes, I mean, it doesn't even make sense if Moses was not a real person. So, now a lot of smart-sounding historians and archaeologists will tell you that none of this ever even happened. They'll tell you Moses was not a real person, Abraham was not a real person, the Jews were never, trust me, these will be smart people teaching college courses will tell you that. All right? So what I need to do is I need to provide the evidence that shows that these people literally don't even know what they're talking about. Okay? Well, basically, now you have to understand how historians work. Historians only will make claims that they have actual proof of. Okay. And so, the way they deal with anything other than the Bible is if they don't have proof, they don't say it's not true. They just say we don't have proof. But when it comes to the Bible, if they don't have proof, they say it didn't happen. They just treat biblical history different from any other kind of history. That's just the way they've done it for a long time. I'm just telling you, read Biblical Archaeology Review. Now, archaeologists have to be skeptical. All right, and they have to use only a particular kind of evidence. But what we're going to do is we're going to look at evidence which I believe strongly supports the accuracy of the biblical accounts. All right, now, if you were to read the book of Genesis, what should be the cultural background? Where should that culture be reflected and when? So should it reflect France in the year 1292? No, that's okay. What would it reflect? It would reflect where and when. Yes.
Ancient Mesopotamia,
roughly.
Euphrates River.
Time-wise, roughly 2000 to 1800 BC. And I'm telling you, we're going to show you that's exactly correct. So let's go. All right. The dominant powers, the Hittites and the Egyptians, then followed by Assyria. These are the dominant powers that were affecting the history of the Jews at the time. By the way, until the early 20th century, archaeologists claimed the Hittites literally weren't even actual people that ever existed. They claimed that they were a sheer, utter invention. I'm telling you. Until the late 19th century, archaeologists claimed Nineveh was not even an actual city. I'm telling you. This is a fact. So why did they say that? Well, I think it's because, I don't know, it's smarter to say you don't believe in the Bible than to say you believe in it. I don't really know where these people come from. All right, so here we go. Let's talk about some of the evidence from the Old Testament. For example, where does the Bible say Abraham was born? I'll give you a hint. Look on the screen there. Ur. Now, if you read the accounts, it seems like Ur was a large, prosperous city. And the fact is, we know from archaeological evidence that Ur was the largest city in Mesopotamia, roughly 2000 BC. There you go. Now, where did Abraham go after he left Ur? He went to Haran. And Haran appears to be sort of a outpost. It seems to be kind of a newer city that hadn't been around very long, not a very prosperous city. And sure enough, Haran has since been excavated. And Haran was in northern Mesopotamia, like in what would be northeastern Syria today. Okay, got it? And Haran was a smaller frontier city, and it was abandoned in the year 1800 BC and never, ever occupied after 1800 BC. All right? Now, the skeptics of the Bible say that Genesis was written like, I don't know, 700 BC, and it's just a story that people made. Now, if that were true, that would mean Haran hadn't even existed for 1,100 years. So how did they know about Haran, which is a real place, it's in the right place, at the right time, and it's the right kind of place? Now, does this prove that Abraham is a real person? No. No. What it shows is Moses didn't write Genesis. You know, some Jew living in 900 BC didn't write Genesis. Whoever wrote Genesis was somebody who had been in Mesopotamia somewhere before 1800 BC. All right? Makes sense. Okay, other things here. The Ebla tablets. Now, Ebla is a city, a fairly large city, that would be in, it would be northeastern Syria today. Sort of, you got the Mesopotamia and then Palestine is kind of in that area up there. And they found a treasure trove of how many? I can't remember how many. Something like 3,000 clay tablets. Now, some of the names that are found in these clay, 17,000. 17,000 clay tablets. Most of these things were lists of, you know, how many, how much wheat and taxes and stuff like that. Just everyday stuff. But some of the names found in the Ebla tablets include the name Isaac, the name Jacob, the name Abram, the name Terah, Nahor, and Sarag, which are like uncles and cousins of Abraham. By the way, those are not the biblical characters. What this shows is Abraham was a common name roughly 2000 BC in Mesopotamia, as was Terah and Sarug and Isaac. So the historical cultural background for Genesis is Mesopotamia, 1800 to 2000 BC. Now let's imagine that somebody sent you a letter. They said this letter was written in 1890. And the people it mentions included Jamal, Skylar, and Brittany. You go, no. That was not written in 1890. No way. On the other hand, let's say somebody said, hey, I got a letter from my friend yesterday. It mentioned Gertrude, Harold, and Mabel. You go, no. Okay, got it? Another interesting story is the story in Genesis 31. It's the story about Laban. Now, what happened was Jacob, he married Leah, and then he married Rachel, and he became incredibly wealthy. And at some point, he said, I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. And he took Laban's two daughters. He took camels and sheep and goats and stuff like that. And Laban chased him down, and he said, give me back my idols. Mm-hmm. He didn't ask for his daughters back. He didn't ask for, he asked for the idols. Well, it turns out a document was found in Mesopotamia, a Babylonian law from roughly 2000 BC, and it's, what it said was this: whoever possesses the household gods inherits all the family property. All right. So you have this weird fact that makes no sense unless you read a cultural, historical document from Mesopotamia around 2000 BC. Ah, makes sense. So my conclusion is we cannot prove that Abraham's a real person. I'm sorry, you just can't do it. There's literally is no possible evidence to prove it. However, there are a number of things that we can dig up that show that it makes sense. Now, the next one is interesting because if you read in Genesis 14, verse 2, there's this guy, Chedorlaomer, who was from Elam, who fought a battle against a league of five cities in the Dead Sea area, and the five-city alliance fought against Chedorlaomer, and they lost, and so they carried off all their stuff, and they carried off Lot's stuff, and then Abraham went and chased them down and defeated them and brought their stuff back. Now, again, as is typical, archaeologists scoffed at this ridiculous story. Five large cities on the shores of the Dead Sea? There's a reason they call it the Dead Sea. Has anybody ever here ever been to the Dead Sea? It is dead. It is desolate. There is not a thing growing there. But then, about 30 years ago, some archaeologists thought, I don't know, let's look just in case. What they found out is, starting around 2200 BC, there was intense agriculture. All right. Now, it was a dry area at that time. It was not some verdant thing, but what they had was five streams that came down, and they flowed water all year. And so they had irrigation. So in the story in Genesis, Abraham's there, I'll take the lousy land up in the Judean hills. And Lot, you take the great farming land down by the Dead Sea. That seems ridiculous. But guess how many cities they discovered along the shores of the Dead Sea? Five cities. All of them destroyed roughly 2,200 BC by fire, and none of them ever occupied again. Yes?
So even back then, the Dead Sea was like really desolate?
It was desert. It's kind of like, have you ever been to the Imperial Valley?
In California?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, there's farming there.
Yeah.
Aw. Could somebody hit the button there at least?
Yeah.
Either that or replace it?
We're at a little battery, 10% battery.
Yeah, maybe it'll go for a while. Maybe you can replace it. All right.
Amazing.
So it'd be like the Imperial Valley. If you go to the Imperial Valley, green, 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 right? Because of irrigation. But if they didn't have irrigation, it would be just desolate and dry and dead. Okay? So, and by the way, the largest of the five is known today as Bab ed-Drah, and it was almost certainly Sodom. And these are part of the ruins of the biblical city of Sodom. Yes? Right. So about a kilometer from the city is basically a graveyard, and they had these wooden structures there, and when they burned from the top down to the bottom. Generally, when you burn something down from the bottom to the top. Now, this does not prove fire and brimstone fell on Sodom and Gomorrah, but it's consistent. And all we can really ask for is the information we have is consistent with what we know from the Bible, and that is a fact. Okay? All right, moving forward. What about the Hittites? And again, until the early 20th century, archaeologists and historians stated without qualification the Hittites, Hivites, Jebusites, Canaanites, Girgashites, and all those otherites aren't even real people. Just made up by Jewish rabbis trying to teach their children to behave their parents or something like that. Okay, well, that was until 1906. By the way, the Hittites are mentioned 47 times in the Old Testament. In 1906, Hugo Winkler discovered the city of Hattusha, which was, his name was Hugo, which means he lived a long time ago, right? All right, yeah. It turns out it was a large city, and it was the capital of a huge empire. They've now found dozens. Thank you. They've now found dozens of Hittite cities. Hattusha was at the center of a large empire, which was the chief opponent to Egyptian power. All right? And here is the Lion Gate in the city of Hattusha. And not only are the Hittites a real person, there are a couple of universities where you can actually get a major in Hittite studies. So much for doubting the reliability of the Bible. Now, can we yet prove that the Gershonites are real people? Maybe not. But every time we find archaeological finds, it supports the Bible. At some point, somebody should just admit that the Old Testament is by far the most accurate, reliable source of historical information from the ancient world. If you've heard of Herodotus. He's the most famous of the Greek historians. His nickname was the father of lies.
Wow.
Okay? By the way, Herodotus was a fairly careful historian. He really was. There's a reason why he's so famous. The reason he's called the father of lies is because he was so blatantly biased against Sparta for Athens. So you couldn't really trust anything he said. If you read the histories of the Babylonians, of the Egyptians, of the Assyrians, of the Hurrians, of the Akkadians, they never lost a battle. They never lost a battle. They never lost a battle. Well, somebody had to lose a battle. Read the historical accounts from the Bible. Did the Jews ever lose a battle?
Yeah.
Like they lost most of them. All right. So like I said, and I don't have to hedge on this statement. The Old Testament is the most complete, reliable source of historical information we have from the ancient world. Okay. Moving on. Papyrus Ipuwer. Now this one is, I would say, maybe not quite as strong. You could exaggerate how strong this evidence is, but this is a document that recorded some disastrous things that happened in Egypt over a fairly short period of time. For example, one place it says the river is blood, whereas in Exodus it says the river was turned to blood. It says blood is everywhere. Blood is throughout all the land of Egypt. It says trees are destroyed and hail broke every tree in the field. It says the land is not light. In other words, there's darkness across the land. And it says he who places his brother in the ground is everywhere. So apparently there were a series of extreme disasters that came on Egypt around 1400 BC with surprising parallels with the Exodus story. Now, to be honest with you, if I was an archaeologist, I'd say, well, whatever. Mm-hmm. But as a Christian, I kind of go, well, that's interesting. Yeah. All right, here's another one. This is one of the Tel El Amarna letters, which were found in the city of El Amarna, which was along the Nile River, which apparently the Jews were involved in helping to build. Anyway, there were a number of letters from minor kings, puppet kings living in Canaan, to the Pharaoh that were found there. And one of those letters said, "The Habiru plunder all the lands of the king. If archers are here this year, then the lands of the king, the Lord, will remain. But if archers are not here, then the lands of the king, my Lord, will be lost." Who do you think the Habiru might be? Habiru. Can you think of a word that sounds an awful lot like Habiru? How about Hebrews? Right. Why is that happening? All right, whatever you do, let's make it not be echo like that because it's hard to teach with that echo. Thank you. Thank you. All right. So basically, What you have is minor kings in Palestine. Thank you. We have minor kings in Palestine, roughly 1400 BC, sending requests to Pharaoh to send troops because the Habiru are coming in from outside and conquering their land. It says, if you don't help us out by this year, we're all going to get conquered. Well, guess what happened? They all got conquered. Okay? Now, skeptics will say, well, how would you know the Habiru are the Hebrews? I don't know. Kind of makes sense. Right place, right time, right description, right what happened. Besides, we can look at the excavations from Jericho. And there's evidence of a destruction of Jericho around 1300 BC, plus or minus 100 years. All right, late Bronze period. It's the city was completely destroyed by fire at that time. The fortifications of the city collapsed at that time. Archaeologists said maybe it was an earthquake. Okay, maybe it was an earthquake, or maybe God did something miraculous, or maybe God caused an earthquake. I don't know. It turns out this destruction occurred at harvest time, when the River Jordan would be at a high level, because they found large quantities of grain stored underneath the rubble from when it was destroyed. The siege was very short. The evidence was that it was only for days or weeks because they found food still there in the city. And contrary to what was customary, the grain was not plundered. In other words, whoever conquered the city didn't take the food that was left behind. What did God say to the Jews? Don't plunder the city. Does this prove that Joshua conquered Jericho? No, it does not. Is this consistent with what we read in the Bible?
Yes.
Does it support what we read in the Bible?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, got it? Why do archaeologists and historians ignore this consistency? Well, ask them. Here's the Stela of Merneptah, the first mention of the Israelites, 1230 BC, during the period of the Judges. Again, until the discovery of the Stela of Merneptah, archaeologists said there was no such thing as Israel in 1200 BC or 1000 BC. They said there was no evidence of the Jews even existing until at least 800 BC. Well, there you go, 1230 BC. All right, I'm going to skip that one. Here, this is an interesting one, the Moabite stone, which is in the Louvre. When I go to the Louvre, I don't go to see, what's that painting, Mona Lisa or something like that. Nah, I don't care about that. I want to see the Moabite stone. So called because it was found in Moab. It's called the Moabite stone or the Misha Stela because King Misha produced it. The year is 870 BC. Is this during the United Kingdom or the Divided Kingdom? It's the Divided Kingdom because the Divided Kingdom began in 931 BC. And it mentions Ahab of the house of Omri. What does that prove beyond any doubt?
Ahab was
a real person, and he was the descendant of the original member of that dynasty whose name was Omri. What does the Bible say? Omri fought against Jeroboam and took over and started a new dynasty. There you go. And so Ahab is indeed of the house of Omri. Now, you and I probably believed it anyway, right? Because we believe the Bible is inspired by God. But there's a bunch of skeptics who don't believe the Bible is inspired by God. But one thing they know for sure is Ahab is a real person, Omri is a real person, and that Omri had descendants, at least the third of which was Ahab. 1 Kings 16:28. Here's one of my favorites. A good friend of ours, John Wilson, was in the city of Dan the very day this stone was discovered. In fact, he told me in his personal story, he actually walked by that stone the very day it was found.
Wow.
The city of Dan. There were actually two cities called Dan. This Dan is the one in, would be the Golan Heights. All right. We actually visited that city when we were in Israel. And the Jewish city of Dan during the time of David had been destroyed. This was a later city, But when they rebuilt the city, they would just take the stones that were there and just build it. So this was just a random stone in the wall.
Wow.
It's an inscription. Oh, I forgot to mention that. Oh, okay. Well, I'll skip that one. There's enough stuff. There's so much evidence here. All right. Anyway, in this inscription, King Hatzael, who was the king of Aram, he makes this boastful claim. He said, I killed Jehoram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, and I killed Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of the house of David. Now, what does this prove beyond any shadow of the doubt? There was a northern kingdom, and there was a southern kingdom. And who was the founder of the dynasty in the southern kingdom?
Jeroboam?
No.
No, wait. David.
David, right. David, the biblical person David. Now, by the way, I cannot prove that David killed Goliath. How would you ever prove it? What, you know, how could you prove it? Find the stone? I mean, it's a round stone. I mean, you know, really. Okay. We cannot prove all, How would you know it's the real, how would you know? I mean, would have the DNA of you know. Not that, it would literally be impossible. It would literally be impossible. There is literally nothing you could even possibly dig up that could prove that David killed Goliath. The only thing you can do is have an accurate historical account of it, which is known as 1 Samuel. Now, I would say that proves that David killed Goliath. Given the accuracy of the implied accuracy of the Old Testament based on historical evidence, I'd say that's solid evidence that David killed Goliath. Is the archaeologist who has to continue to be very skeptical going to agree with that? No. Because they don't believe in God.
Well, are there histories from Philistines?
Yeah, I mean, the Philistines are real people. Yes, Ashkelon has been dug up. Gaza has been dug up. A number of the Philistine cities have been dug up. Philistines were real people, as were the Jews in that time. Yes. Yes. You can't identify bones. You literally, you can't identify bones.
What about the writing on the stone? I mean, because it seems like every stone is different language.
Yeah. This is not in Hebrew. This is in Aramaic. Aramaic. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I don't think it was the language of the Hebrews back then. They were still speaking Hebrew back then, but later on they spoke Aramaic. That's after the Babylonian captivity. But anyway, here's an interesting thing. In 2 Kings 8:28 through 29, it says Joram wasn't killed, he was only wounded. He didn't die, he wasn't killed by Hatzael. Jehu killed him. So again, if you read 2 Corinthians 8:20 and 29, it says, no, actually Jehoram was only injured. He fled the battle, and later he was killed by Jehu. Let me ask one of the easiest questions you'll ever be asked. Which is the more reliable account? This guy's account or the biblical account? Obviously! Obviously the biblical account is more reliable. And anybody with a lick of sense knows that. In fact, it makes sense if indeed Hatzael wounded him and he fled the battle and he died not too long afterwards. No wonder Hatzael thought he killed him. Can't blame him. Okay? So again, I'm trying to explain what we could possibly ever even think about, we could possibly ever prove, and then what we couldn't, and when do we have to use indirect information, when could we hope to have direct information? Like I said, when would we start to see direct evidence? The reign of David. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. By the way, are we going to find any statues of King David in Israel? Why not? Because it said don't make those things, right? There are no carvings showing what David looked like or Solomon. They don't exist because the Jews didn't make them. It's kind of a bummer. It would be kind of cool. All right, but the Jews seemed like they never obeyed God on practically anything, but on that one they did. They never made those things. All right. Huh? There was none. There is none. Oh, Michelangelo. That was in like 1510 or something like that. That was 2,500 years after David died. Yeah. And Michelangelo had absolutely no idea what David looked like. Nobody would have any idea. Actually, we do have a carving of a Jewish king. That's Jehu. Jehu. All right, Jehu. All right. This is the Sennacherib cylinder. By the way, see the picture on the right? I took that picture. That's why it's not a very good picture. Yeah. And then, hey, take that. Turn. Put that camera away.
Oh, you were there then.
Yeah, I took that picture.
Did it tell you to put the camera
on? I don't remember. All right. Sennacherib attacked Jerusalem under Hezekiah. You can read about that in 2 Kings 18 and Isaiah 36. Sennacherib left this cylinder here. It's in the British Museum. All right. All right. Let me see. Oh, I lost a page. Oh, there's a whole page missing. Anyway, so if you read 2 Kings 17, it talks about it. Basically, it shows Jehu bowing down to the king. All right. Now, whether this actually happened or not is not clear, because what the Bible says is he submitted to Shalmaneser, he submitted to him, and he paid tribute to him. So possibly he literally went to the king and bowed down to him, or possibly represents the fact that he submitted to him and paid tribute to him. Don't know. All right, so that's the first carving of an actual Jewish king. It's King Jehu. All right. Let me see. Next is the Sennacherib cylinder. All right. So, by the way, I made a mistake. I don't know if you noticed that. I said Sennacherib, but it's Shalmaneser. Shalmaneser is the one that Jehu submitted to. All right. That's in 840 BC. That's like 100 years. That's way before the Sennacherib cylinder, which is roughly just after 700 BC. So this is from another Assyrian king. His name is Sennacherib. And he boasted having conquered all of Judea. In fact, he said this, as to Hezekiah the Jew, do you believe that Hezekiah is an actual person? I do. As to Hezekiah the Jew, he did not submit to my yoke. I laid siege to 46 of his strong cities, walled forts, and the countless small villages in their vicinity. I drove out of them 200,000 people, young and old, male and female, horses, mules, donkeys, camels, big and small cattle, blah, blah, blah. Himself I made a prisoner in Jerusalem, his royal residence, like a bird in a cage.
Wow.
Story ends right there. So basically what he said is, I put Hezekiah under siege. And then the story ends there. What does that imply? No, it implied that he never conquered Hezekiah. He says, trust me, if he defeated Hezekiah, it would have been in his account, okay? So what it tells us is he came to Jerusalem, surrounded the city, put it under siege, right? Like a bird in a cage, and then the siege ended mysteriously. Because ancient kings never recorded their defeats. Well, what actually happened? Well, what you can do is you can look in 2 Kings 18 and find out that very night his entire army was destroyed. His entire army was destroyed in one night. And again, this is not the fact that it records the most powerful king in the world at that time, putting Hezekiah and Judah under siege and then leaving. That doesn't prove his army was destroyed by the destroying angel. But it's pretty strong evidence that it happened. Okay, got it? There's the Siloam inscription. If you read in 2 Kings 20, It says that Hezekiah built this tunnel. This tunnel was 3/4 mile long that connected the center of Jerusalem with the source of water, which is basically, this is the water that feeds into the Pool of Siloam even today. She wasn't brave enough. So I actually walked through this tunnel.
Is it big?
It's fairly large. You have to duck down occasionally. It's probably about this wide and average of about 6-7 feet high. And it's 3/4 mile long. Anyway, they found an inscription. Basically what happens is they dug from two ends and they met in the middle. And where they met in the middle, they put an inscription reminding themselves of this amazing event. So when it says in 2 Kings 20, now the rest of the acts of Hezekiah, all his might, how he made a pool and a tunnel and brought water into the city, are then all not written in the Chronicles of the King of Judah? Yeah, I believe it. It actually happened. And they actually found this inscription when they dug up the tunnel. There you go. It's not there anymore. They put it in the museum because it would, you know, people would have destroyed everything. The tunnel is still there. That's correct. The Lachish room. Okay? This is, basically, it's an entire room in the British Museum, showing what happened when Assyria destroyed Lachish. These are Jewish captives being taken back. These are Jewish people being flayed, skinned alive, right below the walls of the city, trying to get the Jews to give up. Again, an account from Assyrians of an event that's recorded in the Bible. All right. This is the Babylonian Chronicles, recording when Nebuchadnezzar came the second time in 597 and destroyed the wall. Lachish letters. This is interesting. If you read in Jeremiah 34, it talks about how Nebuchadnezzar had come, and first he took the city of Azekah, and then he took the city of Lachish, all right, and then later he came to Jerusalem. And they found this thing. In fact, if you go to the British Museum, they got a bunch of these Lachish letters. They were written on ostraca, which means pottery shards. That's what they use for writing. And one of the Lachish letters says this. It says, the light at the top of the city of Azekah just went out, and we are next. In other words, the person who wrote that letter probably died within 2 or 3 days of writing that letter. And you can read in Jeremiah 34, verse 6 and 7, how first Azekah was destroyed, and then Lachish was destroyed. All right. So within about 2 days when the author wrote this letter, that person was killed when the Babylonians overran the city of Lachish. Okay, here's another one. This is, if you read in Jeremiah at like 52, it describes how when Nebuchadnezzar took Jehoiachin back to Babylon, he treated him as royalty and he gave him extra provisions. It says that. Well, this is an actual list of provisions they found in the ruins of Babylon. And guess what king it mentions? It mentions King Jehoiachin. That's interesting. And it says in 2 Kings 25, 27 through 30, day by day the king gave Jehoiachin a regular allowance as long as he lived. And what this tablet showed is that he was given far more rations than anybody else on this tablet. He was given basically royal rations. Jehoiachin received 20 times as much food rations as anybody else on the list. So again, confirming that fact that was found in 2 Kings 25, 27 through 30. All right, and here's my favorite one from the Old Testament. We're back to the Ziggurat and Ur. If you read in Daniel chapter 5, I'm sorry, Daniel chapter 6. Yeah, Daniel chapter 6. You read about the writing on the wall. And so basically, what happens is, what's his name? Belteshazzar is putting on this drunken festival, and they bring in the implements from the temple in Jerusalem. They start toasting to the gods and getting drunk using the vet, using the cups that were from the temple in Jerusalem. Not a good idea. And then there's the writing on the wall, right? Read about that. Daniel 6. And then it shows Belshazzar like being totally freaked out and what are we going to do? And he tries to bring in people to interpret it, and they bring in Daniel. And he says, whoever can interpret the writing on the wall will receive the third place in the kingdom. Well, that's interesting. Why the third place in the kingdom? Why wouldn't he offer him the second place in the kingdom? Now, let's turn to histories outside of the Bible. All right, until very recently when the inscription was found in Ur, all historians, Herodotus, Thucydides, all the Greek historians, all the Persian historians, all the Egyptian historians said Nabonidus was the last king of Babylon. They didn't even mention Belshazzar. So again, people said, Daniel, you can't touch Daniel. What's this story about? This never really happened. Oh, they're writing it on the wall. Yeah, sure. Very funny. Daniel's not even a real person. That's what they would say. Then they found an inscription in Ur. And what it explained is, Nabonidus, he was an illegitimate king. He did a palace coup. But what he did was he married the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. And he had a son named, guess what? Belshazzar. And Belshazzar was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. And it gave legitimacy to his reign. So what he did was he made Belshazzar the regent king. So that explains two things. First of all, it proves Daniel's right, Herodotus was wrong, Thucydides was wrong, all the other historians were wrong, including all modern historians until recently. They're all wrong. The Bible was right. But it also explains why Belshazzar said, I can give you the third place in the kingdom. Because who occupied the second place in the kingdom?
The regent.
Belshazzar did. Boom. Okay? These are all historical evidence that supports belief in the legitimacy, the accuracy of the Bible. The Cyrus Cylinder, I think I mentioned this just a few weeks ago. If you read in Ezra chapter 1, 2 through 4, it says the Jews can go back, can rebuild their temple, all this kind of stuff. No ancient rulers ever said go back to your homes and rebuild your cities. But according to Ezra 1, 2 through 4, it said exactly that. And then the Cyrus Cylinder, which is also in the British Museum, it's only like this big. Yes? It's made out of clay, basically a clay tablet. All right? They use the stylus to do the letters.
Yeah.
Yes. And here's what Cyrus claims in this one here. It says, I've returned to the sacred cities on the other side of the Tigris, the sanctuaries which have been in ruins for a long time, the images which used to live therein, and I established for them permanent sanctuaries. I also gathered all their former inhabitants, and I returned them to their habitations. Furthermore, I resettled upon the command of Marduk, the great lord. I say on the command of Jehovah, the actual lord. All the gods of Sumer and Akkad, whom Nabonidus had brought into Babylon to the anger of the Lord of Gods unharmed in their, to their former chapels, etc. In other words, apparently, what Ezra recorded is what Cyrus actually did. All right, we could talk about New Testament archaeology. By the way, until fairly recently, there was no recorded record of this guy named Pontius Pilate.
What?
So guess what the archaeologists and historians said?
He's not a real person.
Not a real person. All right, and then they found this inscription in Caesarea Maritima, which says, Tiberius Pontius Pilatus, prefect of Jerusalem. Tiberius, who was the king at that time, and Pontius Pilate, who was indeed the prefect. All right, this is an actual ankle bone that was found in Palestine with a nail through it. Seems like that actually happened. This is the actual pool of Siloam. All right. This is the Caiaphas ossuary, which is the bone box of Caiaphas, who was the high priest at the time of Jesus. All right, this is an inscription they found at the foot of the temple with the word Korban on it. And Jesus talked about calling something Korban. All right, Sir William Ramsay, I won't read the thing. Sir William Ramsay was one of those hardened, ardent skeptics of the Bible. He didn't believe the Bible was accurate history until he started studying the history of the Near East. And he concluded that Luke is a historian of the first level of quality historian. All right, Sergius Paulus was a real person. Politarchs was the actual name of the actual people who led Thessalonica. Gallio, Acts 18, is a real person. All right, the timing. Erastus actually ruled in Corinth. The year is 50 A.D. We can date the letter of 2 Corinthians to within 1 year, etc. Felix was an actual king. All right, so summary: we cannot prove the Bible or the claims of Christianity using our knowledge of ancient history. We can't prove, for example, that that God established Israel. We can't prove that. All right, but we can disprove the radical claims of the skeptics that the Bible is a bunch of fabricated stories. In fact, we can conclude that to the extent we can compare history and archaeology to the Bible, it confirms that the Bible is a remarkably accurate record of events in the Near East in biblical times. Besides, history and archaeology can help to shine a light on relatively obscure points in the Bible and bring alive the events we find there. So those who say we cannot trust the Bible to give us accurate history of what really happened, I say they don't know what they're talking about. Yeah. All right, we're not going to do groups today, but I'll take one or two questions. Yes?
I have a question. Like on all the museum pictures that you showed us, is there reference to biblical Bibles at the museums, or is that just stuff that
No, of course not.
Where do you gather your information from? Is it that
I've been in the Latius room. I don't know if I took that picture. I can't remember. I don't think I did. I've been there. I've seen the. No wait, I haven't seen the Solomon inscription. It's in the Jerusalem Museum. I've seen this Taylor prism. It actually says that. And anybody with a knowledge of the Bible can. I mean, it is Hezekiah.
Yeah.
All right, and even the skeptics will admit the Tel Dan inscription is an actual reference to the actual person we call David.
Why everything is in, a lot of stuff is in London Museum?
Because the British stole everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They stole everything. And they had no qualms about it.
Not just the British.
The Tel Dan inscription, though, is a fairly recent one. The Tel Dan inscription is from the 1980s or something like that. That's a pretty recent one. But the Moabite stone was found, I believe, in the 19th century, I believe. By the way, Kirbet Kefia, which is a Jewish city from about 1000 BC, is a fairly recent discovery, pretty recent one.
What is that piece, that artifact there?
That's just,
the box?
It was like a Jewish thing that they kept documents in. Like keep scrolls in or something like that.
Is it possible that the reason why they didn't want to believe in the stuff here was so they could make money? Because I know there was a big thing about saying the Dead Sea Scrolls was that around, but I heard from my professor that was just used to make quick cash, publish a book, get money. Maybe that's the same reason why they kind of did these.
I think, first of all, archaeologists are professional skeptics. And they need to be. So if you talk to our friend John Wilson, he will be fairly cautious in what he says. He will only make statements that he can support through actual physical discoveries. He's going to be very careful. All right, so there's that. But there's also the fact that you don't make yourself famous by supporting the Bible. You know, skeptics can get their PhDs and get really famous by cutting down the Bible. But if you say the Bible's probably true, that doesn't get you a PhD. I don't know, what can I say? That's just the way it is. Is it about money? I think it's more about fame than money. These guys are not getting rich. None of them are getting rich.
Well, except
were the first people who found, in the U.S.
What? Who found what?
Who found arrowheads and stuff like that, they would sell them.
They may make a few bucks, but that's the arrowheads. That's nothing to do with Bible. And the person who discovered the Dead Sea Scrolls sold them for, a couple few hundred dollars. It's not about money. The kid got nothing. There's a famous picture of this clay pot that was found in this store there somewhere in Jerusalem, and somebody found and bought it for a few bucks and something like that. But very shortly, it was all shut down. The Jewish government took over the whole thing. And I don't think it's about money. I really don't think it's about money. Nope. Which one are you talking about?
One of the artifacts that we had up there at the tomb, there was a chunk of it missing. I wonder if that was that one. On the other one, the tomb.
This one here, it wasn't perfect. It had been damaged. Yeah. The Siloam inscription. Basically, it describes the date and the time and the circumstances of them meeting in the middle there. And it proves the biblical story about the tunnel being built by Hezekiah to be true.
So what happened with all the gold? The gold that King David collected Solomon?
Oh, it was taken. The Egyptians conquered them. They took the gold. The Assyrians never conquered Judah, but the Egyptians did. And then later Nebuchadnezzar. And the Bible says that the items were taken. In fact, you can read... Babylonian stuff, the Babylonians, they took the items from the temple. But the temple had already been plundered by the Egyptians earlier. Pharaoh Necho, one of the earlier pharaohs, had plundered Jerusalem before the Babylonians ever got there. The Assyrians never conquered Jerusalem. They conquered the entire northern kingdom and most of Judah, but not the whole thing. Oh, that's, David is way, way earlier. When David was king, the Assyrians weren't even particularly powerful. When David was king, it was the Egyptians and the Hittites.
Solomon collected a lot of gold.
He sure did. And it was put in the temple, but it was taken. If you conquer a city, you take all the gold. Yeah. Yeah.
I have to head out, but thank you for the lesson on the history.
You bet.
See, I didn't feel asleep today.
Did you guys stay awake the whole time? Good. Any other questions? We're done, but any other questions?
With Goliath, his sword was described as abnormally large. Right?
But if you found a large sword, would that prove that David killed Goliath?
Yeah. But it does describe its size, its weight, right? And something like that would be something that you would keep as a trophy, like when I've gone to the different museums.
Yeah, but cities have been conquered and plundered and stuff taken. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing left from that time period that we could find.
So maybe we found a very tall skeleton with and the big old...
What you have to do, man, is you have to ask, what would we reasonably expect we might find? So, for example, if there was a city in the time of David, we might find that city. We might find the walls. We might find the size of the city that would either agree or disagree with, there. For example, Solomon built up the city of Megiddo. And you can actually see the walls that Solomon built when he fortified Megiddo. So, are you going to be able to help out cleaning up on Saturday, or are you going to be helping your brother? What about you, Zane? What are you going to be doing?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Do you want, what about sharing?
Oh, like the thing? What time is that going to be?
We'll have to figure it. I'm going to talk with Eve. We only really need two people there.
Okay.
But what we can do is we can have Eve do it from, say, 9 till maybe about 11 or so.
Okay.
And then one other person. Maybe Kevin and Eve. It doesn't end till 2.
For what?
So you and I, so I'm going to be there when it starts, and I'm going to be there when it ends. I'm going to take stuff down, but we need somebody to cover from about 9:30 until around 12.
Okay.
And Eve, hopefully, 10. Let's see who we got coming. 12. 10 to 12. We may only do it till 11:30. You get tired pretty quickly when you're doing all that stuff.
Let me know.
All right.
You really need me. I'll be there.
Good. Thank you. You're awesome. I know you would. How's your dad doing? Is he sick or?
Yeah, he's not sick. He's just not feeling very good. His tooth, is still hurting, so he's taking medicine. He wakes up in the middle of the night. It just hurts.
When's he gonna get that surgery?
They scheduled him for like May 1st.
Alright.
So he's kind of upset about it.
A little over 2 weeks.
Yeah. 2 weeks, that puts in perspective.
Because it's been going on for months, right? It sucks not having money.
Yeah, it's not fun. So he was like, son, you know, I'm probably not going to come back. So I do feel hypocritical, but I really need
you. No.
I totally...
Dude.
I'm not even pressuring him or anything.
No.
I'm like, Dad,
No. But learn from your father, okay? You need to have a consistent career. See, look what's happening to him. And, you know. Well, anyway, you're working toward that, right? Hey, you did officially graduate in December, correct?
No, it's happening this spring.
But you graduated in I know the ceremony, but you did graduate, right? Because I thought perhaps you just got a certificate, but you actually are graduating. Okay, because we're putting on a little graduation party, so I guess you should be part of that.
Thanks everyone for coming.
Hi, John. When you sent the message thanking everybody and I sent that little picture of a guy running away from the police, I meant that as a joke. You know, I never heard anything back now. I want you to think that I was offending you.
No, I thought it was funny. You're obviously trying to be funny.
Yeah. The attempt at humor doesn't always get home.
So you see this?
No.
So hold your phone.
Oh, you just pull it over to the right.
Yeah, you just have to hold it on the other side, otherwise you...
All right, you take care. Say hi to your dad.
I will.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, people, that I lost the first 5 minutes of that lesson.
No, I'm
talking about these people, not you people.
And it makes sense that they wouldn't have those references.